Welcome to Everything House Music and More, and today's my special guest is Luis Gomez. You may not heard of him, but you will know his history today. Luis, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. How you doing,
Thank Bruce? You for doing this, man. I am a fan.
Oh, man.
I really appreciate this, and you ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go. So, Luis, how did you get into the music, and at what age was you into music, period?
Okay, well, I grew up with a family that was really into music. My dad always had electronic equipment, like reel-to-reel recorders, microphones, and stuff like that.
Okay.
And he taught me how to use it. So I always had that kind of piqued my interest in recording.
Yes.
And then when disco came along, that really excited me. I really got into disco a lot. And in high school, I started dabbling as a DJ.
What high school did you go to?
I went to two of them. I went to Thornwood High School in South Holland.
Oh, get out of here.
My last 2 years, I went to Eisenhower in
Blue. Wow, I was at Thorn.
Were you at Thorn? Yeah. Really? Yeah, I went there for summer school.
Wow.
Small world.
Okay, small world.
Yeah, Southside.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, so I started DJing at high school parties and then doing local parties in Calumet Park for, you know, everyone that, you know, was that I knew, like all my friends and stuff like that. So
you was all into all types of formats at that time?
No, it was actually disco.
Oh, just disco?
I'm a disco head, yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
So, okay.
That's, you know, that was my biggest influence. I was collecting, you know, disco albums and 12 inches.
Now, what year was this?
We're talking like, okay, high school parties were like 1977.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, so I guess I would say I started in 1977.
Yeah.
DJing. Okay.
Now, how did you connect with the culture of house music?
Okay, so being on the South Side, I worked at this place called Evergreen Plaza.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And so I met a lot of people there, and this one guy invited me to a party that was happening downtown at this place called the Tiki Room. I don't know if you remember that place.
Yep.
So the Chosen Few played there.
Yeah.
And so it was my first Chosen Few party.
Oh, wow.
And
now, what year was this?
Oh, this is like 78.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a long time ago. So from that point, like we, you know, me and my little group of friends, we were like these disco heads. You know, we'd dress up and go to these parties every month. There was like a different party to go to. The Loft, the Tiki Room, the Mansion, Mendel parties.
Right.
We did all of that.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's kind of how I got in, you know, my start in music.
Correct.
You know, and going to parties. But then we started hearing about this place called The Warehouse.
There you go.
And that for us was like this like mystical place, like, oh my God, that's where the adults go.
Right.
That's where, like, you know, like the older people go. And we really wanted to go there.
Right.
We would see flyers, you know, on our cars, and we'd see Frankie Knuckles' name, and I still didn't know who he was or anything like that.
Right.
And there was no way I was going to be able to tiptoe out of the house at midnight.
Yeah.
To, you know, because I think it opened at midnight.
Opened at midnight, yeah.
Yeah. And so that was like at least a couple of years away from me. But I ended up going to the Warehouse the summer of 78.
Summer 78.
Yeah.
Okay.
So snuck out of the house with some friends.
Wow.
You know, we met up at the 95th Street McDonald's.
Right.
And took the bus to the L and then the L downtown and walked from the L to Adams and Jefferson.
Okay.
And I remember it was probably about 12:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
And hearing the music, just walking down the street, you could hear it before you even got to the block.
Right.
And as we turn the corner, there's these people out there. They were like disco hustling in the street.
Right.
I'm like, this is going to be a night. I knew that we were in for something special.
Yeah.
And we got up there and I got to the door. I had a fake ID with me because I thought, you know, you had to be like an adult. And when I got to the door, oh, what's this guy's name? Oh my God, I can't believe I forgot his name. owner of the Warehouse.
Robert Williams?
Yeah, Robert Williams is at the door. I showed him my ID,
right,
and the ID said I was 35 years old. Because I'm like, you can't deny me if I'm 35.
Right.
Right? But, you know, here I am. I'm like, you know, like
young as hell.
17 and a half.
Right.
And he looks at the ID, looks at me, kind of rolls his eyes, and like, $5. Like,
I got in.
And there was nobody there.
Okay.
There was like six people in the club.
Wow.
It was so early. I mean, we're the teenagers, like, showing up. But
and that was at midnight.
That was at midnight, 12:30, somewhere around there.
Right.
And then around 1:15, 1:30, I mean, like it just started getting packed. And,
okay.
you know, I stayed out all night and got chewed out by my parents when I got home.
Wow. Especially but, coming from all the way out south.
Right, yeah. Right, right. Oh, so my God. I got bit. I got bit and we started going every Saturday.
Okay.
It was like a religion for us. Like, yeah. We had to go. If we didn't go, we felt like we were missing out.
So at that time, being 17.
Yeah.
What record that stuck out to you right there at the warehouse that you...
Oh, my God. Immediately, the first thing that comes to mind is because I was there the night that Frankie first played this. And he played it twice.
Okay.
But he played it once at about like 2 o'clock in the morning and it tanked.
Okay.
It cleared the dance floor.
Okay.
Deputy of Love.
Wow.
It didn't work at 2 in the morning.
Right.
He played it again at 5. Everybody lost their minds.
Wow.
But I was there the night that he played it.
Yeah.
So that for me was, that sticks out.
Okay.
War Dance by Quebec Electric.
Right.
And that one reason that song sticks out is because of the sound system there. It really reproduced that song very well.
Yeah.
They had these tweeters that hung from the ceiling.
Right.
It was like a divorced tweeter system.
Yeah.
And there was like two tweeters and there was four poles hanging from the ceiling. And it made the song sound like it was three-dimensional.
Wow.
Like you could hear the highs right above your head, almost like you can reach up and touch them.
Wow.
And that song was like, it stood out to me because it sounded so great at that club. Well, everything sounded great there.
Yeah. So how did you come to know Frankie Knuckles?
Well, that's a little bit later.
Actually,
I met Jamie first.
Okay, so let's pause right there and let's go into this one then.
Yeah.
You're infamously known for assisting Jamie Principal with his early recordings. How did you meet him and when?
Okay, so we met probably late 78, 79, early 79.
Okay.
And I met him at the Evergreen Plaza.
At Evergreen Plaza.
He was walking down the hallway.
Right.
And this was the most new wave looking motherfucker I've ever seen. I'm like, what are you doing here on the South Side? He looks so cool.
Right.
You know, with spiky hair, these black Fiorucci wraparound sunglasses, two different color Converse All-Stars, a purple and a red one.
Right.
He had lavender gloves on, knit gloves. It was wintertime.
So just intriguing,
he
right?
was, I'm like, yeah. I want to know who you, I stopped him like, okay, who are you?
Right.
Who are you? And so we became friends after that.
Okay.
And I think he was just flattered that somebody picked up on like, you know, what he was wearing.
And that was 79, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we started this friendship and we would talk all the time about music.
Okay.
I would tell him about these stories, you know, about, you know, me going out with my friends. Because he never went out. He came up in a really strict environment. So he wasn't allowed to go out.
Right.
So I would tell him, like, oh, we did this and we did this and we went there and we wore these clothes and it was everything. And we got to the point where, like, he started to really trust me and he started to open up and share his music with me.
Okay.
And he invited me over one day and he had all this equipment in his bedroom, you know, 4-track recorders, synthesizers, and drum machines, whatever. And he played this one track. It was called Your Love.
Right.
And it was a little 3-minute track. And I listened to that. And I'm like, oh, well, first of all, I thought the vocals were super sexy.
Yeah.
And that beat, I'm like, this could be a club song.
So this was created already.
It was already done.
It was already
like the demo. The demo.
The demo.
Yeah. So he played me like a little 4-track demo of it.
Right.
And, you know, back then, what Frankie played at the warehouse, we didn't call it house.
Right.
And he played stuff other than disco.
Correct.
Whatever was danceable.
Right. He played it.
He played it.
Right.
And everybody did too. Everybody else played stuff like that too. You know, we didn't have these like confined, like, oh, we have to play this genre and this
absolutely.
Genre. It was just everything. If it had a beat,
right,
you would throw it in.
Okay.
You know, if it made your floor move, your dance floor move, you would throw it in.
Okay.
Anyway, so I just kind of off the cuff remark, I'm like, you should let me remix this.
Mm.
That was it. I didn't really think anything about it.
Right.
So a few months passed by and he calls me up. He's like, hey, I'm going to be in the studio. Why don't you come up and do a remix to that Your Love song? I'm like, okay. So he asked me to meet him at Soto Sound Studios. I think it was in Evanston.
Yeah.
And, you know, I drove up there and I really wasn't sure what I was going to do because I didn't have access to stems or anything like that.
So back then, yes.
So you just kind of had to sit there and do a cold listen.
Absolutely.
And just kind of like take notes and you know, whatever. And
so let me interrupt right there. So Jamie credit you as engineer, the engineer version that took hold of Chicago. So it was actually your mix that everyone was playing in.
Everyone wasn't playing it. It was Frankie that was playing it. And people got copies of it, I suppose, on cassette or something. But
reel to reel and cassette,
he created an anthem out of my version.
Ah.
Yeah, it was like an 8-minute version.
Okay.
It had that extended intro.
Right.
It had that really unique drum breakdown that used like a pitch transposer on
the
drums. You can hear that same effect on Beat the Clock by the Sparks.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah.
The same kind of drum effect. And Frankie played that. You know, I mean, when I did the mix that night with Jamie, I mean, I basically was instructing the engineer that, you know, Jerry Soto, like, okay, can we repeat this part?
Right.
And he was doing the cutting of the tape. And I was like, okay, let's do this. Okay, let's take this out. Okay, no drums here.
Right.
All right, now let's repeat this. And it was kind of like building the track.
So you was remixing before remixing was known at that time. Right?
And, you know, we weren't using like, you know, like the way we do it now. It's just all cut and paste.
Correct.
Cut and paste, adding effects, dropping stuff out. That's why, like, when you hear, I mean, and it's, I don't think anybody has a copy of it anymore. Or I have a feeling one person does. But if you listen to that version, the transitions are hard transitions because they're edits, you know?
Yeah.
And so sometimes they come in on an upbeat instead of a downbeat.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's also kind of what adds to the...
So Frankie was the only one that was playing. He's the only DJ that had it at that time.
For a year.
Right.
And I remember, you know, after I got the tape, I had it on reel to reel.
Right.
I belonged to the same record pool as Frankie.
IRS, right?
IRS record pool. And so I knew that he was going to show up and pick up his vinyl same day I was. So I stood around and waited. I waited for 2 hours until he showed up.
And you're the one that gave him a tape.
Right. And I didn't know him. I saw him in the DJ booth, at the warehouse, but I didn't go in there. Oh, I was a teenager and there was nothing but grown ass men in there.
I mean,
I was really intimidated. I don't know who these people are.
Right.
And I didn't know if anybody was going to be, you know, welcoming or friendly. I didn't even know if you could do that. Can you go up to the booth? Are you supposed to disturb the DJ? I don't know. Anyway, so I waited for him and I gave him, I introduced myself and I'm like, hey, here's a song that I did a mix to.
Yeah.
Will you listen to it? And he's like, he looked at it. He's like, okay. And he just popped it in his bag and that was that.
That was it.
Wow. There was no other conversation. And then I left. And then that Saturday night, I showed up with my friends.
Yeah.
And about 3 o'clock in the morning, all the lights turned up on the dance floor, which they did that, you know, for certain songs.
Yeah.
And then you hear the arpeggio opening to Your Love. And I lost my shit. I'm like, oh my God, this is the track. This is the track I just did the mix from or the mix of.
Right.
And my friends were like, what?
Yeah.
Because nobody knew that.
Right, exactly.
So they didn't even know what I was talking about. I'm like, and then dun, dun, now, dun, dun, dun.
So at this time, Jamie never been to the warehouse at that time.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. He hadn't even met Frankie yet.
Okay.
And, that bass line came in and then the beat came in and everybody started dancing. And then Frankie played it again a little later on. And then he did it every week.
Wow.
Every week he would play that. And
so hold on, excuse me for one second.
Mm-hmm.
So Louis, when you went into the studio that time, everything was done. Jamie's vocals, everything.
Jamie does his own vocals, right? I just
rearranged
the song and extended certain parts and made it dance floor friendly.
Right.
Because it didn't have an intro. It was just like, and then into the song.
Okay. Now, it was speculated that Jamie's version, the original version, was recorded with live drums. Is that true?
Yeah.
And Jamie played the drums at the time.
Yes, he played all of it. He played everything on there.
Wow.
I had some really crazy ideas when we were in the studio too, because I'm like, I wanted this clap thing to go on. He's like, well, you know, the clap only comes in certain sections. I'm like, can we just add a delay and make a clap through the whole thing? He's like, it doesn't work that way. I was so naive. I didn't know. I'm like, well, okay,
so
let's
when was
try
the
this.
Drum machines added at the time? Was it when you did your mix or it was already there?
It was when Frankie took him in to re-record the song.
Okay, so we're going to get that.
Yeah,
we're going to get
there,
to that.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, so this is all the organic material, like the hand-played synthesizer.
So the original never had the arpeggiated line at the beginning.
It didn't have the arpeggiated. It had it in the song.
Yeah.
But I'm like, no, let's start with that.
Wow.
Let's start with that.
Okay.
And because I just... heard something in there, like, oh, okay. Plus I was a little high. Yeah. You know, I had smoked a joint on the way up there. I'm like, oh, this sounds really good. This sounds really good. Let's do this.
Well, that's what everybody do. That's why they go in the studio and do that. So, you know.
Let's do this. Cause this, and you know what? It worked on the dance floor because everybody, you know,
okay.
Whatever they were doing, you know.
So now let's go into the role of Frankie Knuckles and create the other version of Your Love.
So here's what happened. I don't know why that night that he first dropped the track, you know, my remix, I don't know why I didn't go up to the booth, but
right.
I didn't.
Right.
And I did end up running into Frankie a couple of weeks later.
Okay.
At the record pool. And he's like, hey, I want to meet this guy. I'm like, sure. Okay. Let me see what I can do.
Okay.
And it was a matter of trying to get Jamie out of the house to come and meet. And eventually, you know, oh my God, it had to be about a year later that Frankie and Jamie and I met at the record pool.
At the record pool.
That's how I remember it. I took him to the, because it would be easier for me to get him there than it would be to get him to the club.
Right.
And, you know, they met.
Yes.
And then the discussion of a new version, all that happened without me. Like, I don't know.
You wasn't there at all for the process.
That. All I know is that Frankie took Jamie back into the studio to re-record the song.
Now, it's been said that the songs at some point were re-recorded at the power plant. Do you know if that's true? Not true at all.
No, there was a drum beat version of it.
Okay.
That I think Craig did.
Craig
Loftus.
But
all he did basically was, you know, program a 909 and add I think Adrian is her voice.
Adrian Jett, right.
And he just added her vocals over it. So, no, that's after Frankie's version.
Why, okay, so Adrian wasn't on the original version.
No, it was just Jamie's voice.
Just Jamie's voice.
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I you know, and if you see a couple of these other documentaries, they'll allude to this too. Yeah. But like, I think he overpolished it. I think it was too R&B sounding, at least for my taste. And if you go and look at the documentary, Unusual Suspects.
Okay, right.
You know, the guys and that they're interviewing there, they're like, yeah, that version came out on vinyl, but it's that first one.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the truth about it. That nobody ever played the vinyl because they always wanted the original.
That other version never got pressed.
Right.
My version never got pressed. It never got a proper release. And I think the only person that has a copy of that right now is this guy named Erasmo Rivera.
That's what my next question was. What was Frankie collaborate as Erasmo? Like, what was his role in that?
Erasmo?
Yes.
He did edits. He did a lot of editing.
Okay.
And he was an engineer.
Right.
I don't know what his role was in the second Your Love version. Right. I don't know if he was involved with that at all.
So Craig Loftus basically just added a drum machine. Add Adrian Jett. That was his.
I think Craig was also in the studio with Frankie and Jamie when they were re-recording.
Yeah, because Craig said on my last interview that they recorded the vocals at the power plant.
Yeah.
That's what he was saying. Yeah. Okay.
Now, there may have been a recording there, but that's not what went on vinyl. That's
right, right. Now, do you remember any contribution from Greg Gray at that time also?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, like I kind of like was omitted in that whole.
Wow.
Like so I was never invited to come into the studio when they were doing the re-recording.
Right.
I was after
it was your version that really got to
right.
And I so was, did Jamie ever tell Frank like, well, this is.
He asked him. He's like, where's Jose?
Right.
Or is Jose coming? Right. And I don't know what the response was. I wasn't there, so I have no idea.
Okay.
That's something to ask Jamie.
Yeah. So, well, I've been trying to get Jamie on, man. Like we spoke before, you know, Jamie's being a little bad boy. And, you know, he's giving me a runaround, you know.
Yeah.
But maybe he'll see this and he'll, you know, rethink what he wants to do with me.
The thing about this whole thing is that had I not, like, met Jamie, had I not been involved in that initial process of that first version, I don't know if I would have gotten into music production.
Right.
But he made me believe that it was accessible to me.
Right.
Hey, you can write your own stuff. You can do this. I didn't know that was for us. I thought other people did that.
Yeah.
I thought that it's rock musicians but he showed me that if you have the equipment and you have the knowledge, you can do this yourself. And that was he was my inspiration to go into production, really.
Okay.
And my stuff wasn't good enough. You know, I put stuff together and I would bring it to Frankie. He was like, it needs some work. You know, he did play some of my edits.
Okay.
Ron Hardy played my edits.
That was my next question is, what was Ron Hardy role in Breaking Jamie in Chicago, do you think?
I think he got a copy, like a copy of a copy.
Yeah.
On tape, and he started playing it.
Okay.
And that's all I remember. I don't know how legitimately he had access
and
to
you,
this
music. Did you know Ron Hardy personally?
I knew him, but we weren't like friends. We're like acquaintances. Oh, hey, I really liked your edit. Can I have a copy of it? And like, I give him a copy of Cathedrals.
So basically, you was the Tom Moulton before Tom Moulton almost. I'm just saying, people don't understand. Even though you didn't create the music, but you did because you created that whole essence of like, okay, this is the intro.
Oh, the arrangement.
Yeah, the arrangement. So that's part of creating it because if they didn't have that at first, in all honesty, if that version wasn't heard, then Frankie wouldn't get, interested in Jamie and everybody else the same thing.
And I don't think Jamie would have gone in that direction. I think that he had this sort of like alternative dance sound.
Yeah, absolutely.
I heard something different in this particular song.
Correct.
And had I not stumbled across him at the mall.
Yeah.
Wow. What would he be doing? Like, he might have gone in a rock direction.
Now, were you still friends with Jamie after Frankie and them?
We've always been friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
There's said to be like four original Jamie recordings, Your Love, Bad Boy, Baby Wants to Ride, and Make Me Scream. Were these recorded around the same time with the similar process?
Yeah.
Which one was first?
Your Love was first.
Your Love was definitely first.
My version was first, then Frankie's version.
Okay.
And then Bad Boy. We started hearing all this stuff on tape.
Right.
Before it was ever released on vinyl.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I'm not really sure, the order of the songs because we were hearing demos as soon as Jamie recorded it, it was being played at the club,
right?
Off of reel because Frankie had that
absolutely
the Pioneer sunk into the deck, yeah, the reel to reel recorder, and he would play demos, and it sounded great, and and it sort of like whet everybody's appetite for like, I want to do this. It inspired a lot of people,
absolutely.
I think of it like this. Because I feel like I attended Frankie Knuckles University.
Yeah.
Because I sat in the DJ booth at the power plant every Friday night and just watched and studied.
Yeah.
I studied the music that was played.
Right.
I studied who the people were that were making this stuff, and I would try to go back and emulate. I went a slightly different direction.
Right.
I didn't buy the 909 or the 808s.
Yeah.
I was working with the Korg drum machines.
Okay.
And I did a track called Change. Okay. And Frankie used to play that all the time.
Okay.
And it was this like crazy percussion track that I used these two drum units with.
Right.
And Craig ended up releasing a re-edit of it.
Oh, okay. Craig Loftus.
A couple of years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
And it's Grand High Priest versus Louis Gomez.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Change.
Okay.
And he surprised me one night because I went to a party that he was playing at and he dropped it. I'm like, oh my God, this song is like 30-something years old. Years old. It was crazy to hear it.
So was Jamie influenced by Prince or David Bowie, you think?
Oh, both.
Both? Okay.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I kind of think there were some tracks that, his vocals sounded very much like Bowie,
right,
but the music production was like Prince.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a hybrid, but I think he was influenced by like Roxy Music and Visage and all that, the alternative dance stuff from that era.
Yeah. And so at the time, did Jamie tell you what was his local influences and, when he really became into this house culture scene?
Oh, I think that happened when he got sucked into the power plant.
Yeah.
Everybody around that, Frankie and Craig.
Yeah.
I think that's because I think he was pulled into that direction.
Okay.
But he really could have gone any direction.
Now, were you involved in any other releases with Jamie? Like,
no.
Waiting on My Angel or anything like that?
No. I wish I was, but no, like, I wasn't invited back to, do anything. And I really, that was kind of a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
Because what it forced me to do is to hone my skills. I don't think I was good enough. I don't think I was like, my skill level was like down here.
And,
Craig was already studying engineering, engineering.
Right.
I hadn't done that yet.
Yeah.
And so I went out and I got a job at a recording studio.
Oh, wow.
And, just lowly little MIDI recorder.
Really?
You know, yeah. And I moved my way up. I worked at two studios in Chicago, To the Limit Recording with Erasmo Rivera and CRS Studios.
Oh, CRS, yes.
And I worked at both places. Now, that to me has served me to this day.
Yeah.
All of that that I learned there transfers over to what I'm doing now. You know, and you know, that's experience.
But sometimes, you know, you should, some people that it's hard to say. That vibe and everything that you recreated, you know, sometimes, you know, you need that back in there. Like, you did the original.
Yeah.
The edit at which we say your mix of it. I mean, sometimes they should have just brought you back. Like, what do you think, Louis? Like, you was there from the beginning.
I think so, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? I stopped thinking about that.
Yeah.
Because for a long time, that was a sore point for me. And it was kind of hurtful.
Right.
But
yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And, no, absolutely.
It really actually forced me to just like do my thing.
Right. So that first record, Your Love, was the last time you ever worked with Jamie.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Or maybe not. Maybe we'll do something.
Yeah. So Jamie Long accused Frankie for improperly selling Jamie's recording of both tracks and DJ Nasno.
Yeah.
Of course, they resolved the issues. But what do you remember about the early tensions at that time?
Oh, my God. I remember Jamie being pissed and hurt.
Right.
Like, how could he do this?
Yeah.
And we were all just, I mean, seriously shocked.
Yes.
But then if you look at that time in the music scene in Chicago, that was rampant.
Right.
People were stealing ideas left and right.
Right.
And it wasn't unheard of. So yeah, we were shocked that Frankie did that. And I don't know the whole story.
Yes.
But what we saw from the outside is like, wow, that was really crappy thing to do. But maybe they had an agreement or maybe not.
Right.
Idea. We don't know. That's between them. I have no idea.
So, Louis, you've been in this game for a while. And you was there, you know, since this creation of Your Love. There's always been a rivalry between Jesse Saunders' On and On and Jamie Principle's Your Love.
Yeah.
As the origin of the house music genre.
Okay.
Do you think Your Love was the first house music recording, even though it was not commercially available?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Yes. Well, one reason is because it was actually played at the warehouse, and On and On was not.
Wow.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, house music was, at that time, what was being played at the warehouse.
I'm glad you said that, because now, you've been in the game, and people don't know this, because everyone I interviewed before has gave me a lot of the different answers. This is my question to you. Where do you think the term house music came from?
From the warehouse.
Okay.
See, back then, it was even a way to identify one another. Like, if you dressed a little different, a little, you know, and you saw another person on the street that was kind of dressed like that, and you're just like, are you house?
Right.
I'm like, yeah, I'm house. It was a way, that, it was, it meant, do you go to the warehouse?
Yes.
It was code.
Right.
It was coded language. Yeah. That's where house comes from. The actual name of the club. The warehouse.
Right.
That's where it comes from.
Okay.
100%.
All right. And I try to get this, man, because you got some people say, no, it came from people playing disco in their parents' house in the basement and all this other
stuff. I've heard that too.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not.
Okay. And then, you know, you got some people like, the house was the same time doing disco. And I'm like, it can't be, because no one was playing that music in that club except for the warehouse at the time.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you cleared that up.
You know, and we have to remember, too, that, like, yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff is actually post-disco. What became house music is post-disco.
Absolutely.
You know, disco had died.
Yeah.
It went underground.
Correct.
And that was a really good thing, because there was a lot of stuff being put out that was actually too commercial and garbage. But it had a time to, like, percolate underground and become something else.
Yeah.
It gave space for a track like Your Love by Jamie Principle to rise because it was new.
Yeah.
And I think that if people are going to use that argument about, oh, it's because, you know, we play this music in our basements at our house. Well, why don't you just call it basement music? I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Louis, I am with you. Preach. I am with you 100% on that. But, you know, you got the elder like Wayne Williams to go and say like, well, he was saying, this is what he was telling me. DJs knew what disco was. The Stray Kids didn't say it was disco. They say it was house because that was the music they parents were playing in house. I don't know if that's true or not, But I never heard that either.
Because, you know, those guys were having parties at places like Sawyer's and, you know, the Loft and all this. And we, the kids, were going out to those events.
Right.
We weren't listening to this at our parents' house.
Right.
We were listening to them play this stuff. We didn't call it house music when they were playing it. It was just a party. This is
It was actual
disco music.
Yeah.
It did not become that until the Warehouse came along.
Okay. Good.
And more people were introduced to the Warehouse and more people started going to the Warehouse.
Right.
Because it used to be predominantly gay, but it became very mixed after a while.
Okay.
I think, at least personally, it started to change. And by the time it got to the power plant, by the time Frankie went to the power plant, it was a more mixed environment.
Correct, correct.
But yeah, we were calling it house music because of the Warehouse.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Thank you for clearing that up. All right, you have a number of very credible deep house projects on different platforms. Tell us about any notable tracks you produce and, you know, do you still DJ them out wherever you go right now?
Well, I mean, I do play out. I have a monthly show on Twitch, on Sugar Shack Radio.
Okay.
It's called Groovebox. It's me and my partner, Jesse Rivera.
Okay.
And we've been doing it for 10 years.
Nice.
And we do play out when we get asked to play out.
Okay.
So if you guys want to book us, just, you know,
there
look
you
us
go.
Up online.
Y'all see that?
We'd love to play out. We do specialize in like deep, funky disco, like that kind of vibe, soulful. Touch Afro, but I will talk about a project right now. We have our end of the year, a compilation on Basement Tapes Records.
Okay.
It's called Remixes and Dubs. And what we've done is we've taken some of our favorite tracks over the past year and remixed them or created dub versions of them.
Nice.
And one of them I'm especially proud of is called Calling Four.
It's
a track by Jesse Rivera.
Okay.
I did the remix to it.
Nice.
And I will challenge your listeners and watchers to go out and listen to it and figure out what the inspiration was.
Good. I challenge you to. Can I do a remix of it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
100%.
All right.
Yeah.
Please send me that.
I'll send you the stuff. Yes. Yeah. I mean, you just gave me chills. Oh, my God. On camera. No, seriously. Like, there's one person that I played a demo of it for.
Okay.
And he was like, I know what it is. And it was Sheldon Randolph.
Okay.
He's like, Louie, he calls me Jose.
Right,
he still calls me Jose. He's like, Louie, I know where your inspiration came from. I'm like, if there's anybody that would know, it would be you, Sheldon.
Okay. Well, I can't wait to hear it. I want to see.
But I'm really proud of it. And it's the promos are out now on TrackSource.
Okay, good.
And next week it becomes available, you know, everywhere.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Okay, good.
But yeah, so our end of the year project is a big thing for us because it's a compilation.
Good.
And it's in the top 100 albums on TrackSource right now. So we're especially proud of that.
Good, good, good.
So, but thank you for asking.
No, absolutely. So here's another question. Do you think Hispanics was left out of the history of house music?
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of gatekeeping going on.
Okay.
Like, for example, I was watching this YouTube video, and it was something about somebody from back in the day was talking about music, and they were talking about a particular track.
Yeah.
And there was a comment where a Latino DJ came in. He's like, oh, this is all very well and nice, but how come he doesn't mention any of the Latino contributions?
Right.
And then somebody else commented behind that and said, there were no Latinos involved in house music.
Mm.
And I didn't say anything because I just did not want to get into it.
Right.
But that's completely discounting what I've done.
Absolutely.
And everybody else, like Rafael Rosario and everyone there that was there at the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, there were so many other people, names that I don't even know that were involved, Latinos that were involved. House wasn't just happening on the South Side.
Correct.
You know, the term came from the Warehouse.
Yes.
But we all attended the Warehouse.
Yes.
There were so many different kinds of people that went there.
Right.
And we left influenced by that and going and it's sort of like spreading the gospel.
Right. You know, spreading the word. Yes.
Right. I came back out here to the, you know, the far South Side and was playing all this music for the kids that I played for at these high school parties. And, you know, I was turning them out.
Yeah.
On this music.
Yeah.
Like they had no idea what the heck they were listening to, and they loved it. They ate it up.
Yeah.
So much so that when places like the Playground opened up, everybody started going there because of that, because they were taught, this is the music.
Right.
This is what you should be dancing to.
Yes.
We've definitely been left
out. Well, good. You know what? And I bring that up because knowing your story, you should be mentioned with all the rest of the pioneers because of that. And if it wasn't for that record, Your Love, a lot of people wouldn't have records, you know, stay. And that's the reason why. And it's your version that everybody wants to play, you know?
Maurice, thank you for saying that. It's something I've thought, and I'm too humble to say that.
No, you're good, because yeah. I'm giving you flowers right now. I want to say that you're part of this history, brother.
Thank you.
And I want people to see this. That's why I do this, so people really can get the truth. Because like you said, there are some gatekeepers that want to just say, it was me, and that's it. And we know that's not true, you know? Another question I want to ask you, since you was there from the beginning, what did the Hot Mix 5 do for you at that time when they first came together?
For me, they commercialized everything.
Wow. Okay.
It was commercial. But, you know, that's kind of a good thing, though, too, yeah. because it really played into the explosion yeah. that happened around the world. So it's not a negative thing.
Right.
Being commercial doesn't mean
it just makes it popular.
It just makes it popular.
Yeah.
And there is a commercialization of a lot of stuff, a lot yes. of different genres of music.
Yeah.
Sometimes it needs to happen.
Okay.
You know, if you want to reach more people, if you want this thing to keep floating,
right.
it does yeah. have to happen
yeah,
that
yeah,
way.
Absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
There's always going to be underground house.
Right. Did you appreciate it that you get to hear it on the radio now when it first came out?
There was certain DJs that I appreciated.
Yes.
I did not like, and I know this is probably going to rub some people the wrong way, I wasn't into all the scratching stuff.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I'm more of a purist when Correct. It comes to dance music. And for me, that was a little distracting.
Yeah.
But good for the people that yeah. got into that. And yeah, yeah. and it really like inspired people to do other things.
Yes, now. Yes, yes.
But for me, yeah, I did have my favorite DJs.
Okay. So speaking of that, who is Luis Gomez's favorite DJ that he likes to hear if he goes out?
Oh, geez, that's a really good one. okay, well, first, I love David Harness.
Okay.
I love the style of music he plays.
Yes.
I've seen it. I'm friends with him, but okay. you know, I've also seen him play out several times. And he's just a genius. He's so calm, and he always keeps that dance floor moving.
Yes.
Another favorite of mine is, of course, Louis Vega.
Yeah.
I mean, my God, the guy is just incredible.
Now let's go local, Chicago. Yep.
Chicago, favorite DJ. That's difficult. Lori Branch.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And I mean, I was her mentor back in the day.
Wow. Okay.
I mentored her. I also mentored Craig.
Okay.
I taught them how to blend.
Wow.
And
well, who taught you how to blend at the time?
I learned on my own.
Okay.
And I was trying to figure out how do they make these songs seamless. And it was the whole thing was you have to have the mixer and
Correct.
Matching the BPMs.
Yeah.
When Vertigo, which was a little DJ group that started a long time ago with Craig and Lori and Jean-Pierre, I was friends with them and I became an honorary member of Vertigo.
Right.
And that was when I got a chance to mentor them in blending. Like you guys, you can't just play like one song after the other. Mix this stuff. And there was this competition that Lori was in, and I taught her the mix that she won with.
Wow.
And she beat the Chosen Few.
Wow.
I don't know who out of the Chosen Few she played against, but it was one of the guys from there.
Wow.
And
what year was this?
Oh, God. It was 80?
80? Okay.
Maybe 79, 80?
Okay.
Yeah, somewhere along that line.
Yeah, it had to be Wayne then.
Yeah. It was at Sawyer's. I think that the contest was at Sawyer's.
Okay.
And I do have an interesting story, though, too, about being part of Vertigo.
Okay.
And about some of these people who kind of like dub themselves like, you know, the King of House. And
right.
A particular story about that guy.
Okay.
I think you know who I'm talking about.
Let's go. Let's do it.
So I was playing for Vertigo at Sawyer's one night.
Okay.
And it probably was 1979. And he comes up on the stage with all his boys.
Okay.
And they're all standing behind me, like really intimidating. There had to be about 8 of them.
Right.
And out loud in front of everybody, he says, he's playing that warehouse fag bullshit.
Ooh.
And everybody laughed.
Wow.
But guess what he was playing 2 years later?
Same thing.
Their warehouse fag bullshit.
Wow.
So I don't think he should be dubbing himself the king because you're actually a follower. You're following the trend. You didn't set that. We were playing that stuff before you. We took the chance to do that.
Wow.
You know, yeah, you were lucky to be able to play at certain parties and certain clubs, but
yeah.
you know, You weren't there from the beginning. Like,
wow. Like, preach, Louis. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's going to see this, and, you know, he's going to clap back a little bit.
But the thing is, it's the truth. Okay. It was the truth.
That's what I want, Louis. So let me ask you, what should we look for in the future for Louis Gomez?
Well, we are celebrating our 10th year at Basement Tapes Records. Okay. I'm super proud of this imprint that we started. My business partner, Jesse Rivera, and I are... You know, we are looking to put out the best music, and, you know, we have producers from around the world on our label. We like to curate a certain sound. I think that
yes.
You should be, you know, looking for more from us there in that respect.
Okay.
I'm super proud of that.
Good.
More music videos from us and more music. And,
tell them where they can reach you at.
Well, they can reach me at, you can follow us on YouTube,
okay.
Basement Tapes Records.
Good.
That's the easiest way to do that. You'll see our music videos up there. You can hear our latest music on there. You can follow me on Bandcamp.
Louis has a lot of hot stuff, y'all. Trust me.
Yeah, you know, Bandcamp's got like my one-offs. It's got like a lot of disco edits and bootlegs if you guys are interested in that.
Yes, please go check it out because it's in my cart right now.
Oh, my God. Thanks, Maurice. I appreciate it.
So, Louis, thank you for this.
Thank you.
I really appreciate this, man.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you.
It's something that I want to do because Jamie told me you got to do this. And I kept hearing his name. I'm like, who the hell is Louis Gomez?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm glad this happened. I'm glad you're here, brother. And I just want to say thank you. Love you, man, for doing this.
Love you,
I appreciate
man.
You.
I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
No, I will. You know what? Listen, you're a part of history and people need to know that. And I don't care what people say. If you didn't play it, whatever. It was your concept of that record that created what we call today's house music. Because that record, that tape, and as my brother, you know, like I got into the music really because of him, because he used to go out to the warehouse, power plant, come back, play me the tapes, and he used to play this record. You know, and I heard it, and I'm like, wow, that's dope. And if it wasn't for that version, I don't think anyone would be where they're at right now if it wasn't for your version.
Well, I'll just piggyback on a really quick note on that. We were kids. We didn't know what we were doing, and we didn't know the impact it was going to have.
Correct.
We were doing it because we loved it.
Absolutely.
That's the only we weren't like trying to set this sort of standard or anything. We're like, hey, this is what we have inside, and we're putting it out.
How That's cliche. It. You're love. See, you did it because you're love. Louis, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Remember, everybody, click the button, subscribe, make sure you get all the notifications. Thank you for tuning in. Once again, God bless. Good night, y'all.